Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it.
Ding, ding, ding. Round two.
Oh, God. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. No, do you know what?
We knew it was going to happen,
didn't we?
We did.
And we're laughing because I feel like I'm slightly on the edge of madness. So I feel like I'm laughing through it. But yeah, poor Kit. He's been really sick. So Thursday he came back from school and he was roasting hot. Like, it was a really hot day, but it felt like fever. And he was like, oh, look at my knee. And I was like, oh, what's wrong with your knee? And he was like, I've got this really itchy sore spot. And I was like, but it didn't look like a chicken pox at this point. It just looked like a spot, you know, yeah, without a head on it. Anyway, so through the night, Thursday night, vomiting, fever, like a horrible night. I mean, he was sipping water and he was literally projectile vomiting, and he projectile vomited in our bed. I got some splash on my face. I mean, it was everywhere.
Oh,
like, our whole house just stank of vomit. I know, sorry for anyone that's eating their breakfast. And then Friday day, obviously no more spots appeared, but the fever was still, and every time his fever spiked, he would throw up. So I was thinking, has he got a sickness bug? Is this the virus coming out in a different way? And then on Saturday, this pot came up on his arm. So he's only got four chicken pox. Four. That's it. One on his shoulder, one on his arm, two on his leg. That's it. And I'm still waiting, but it's day four or five today. And I don't think he's going to get any more, but it's so much more viral. Like, he can't get through the night.
He's more poorly with it.
Yeah.
It's so strange, isn't it? How different kids react to different, like, viruses and different things. Do you know what though? On the positive, I feel like last week you were in the chicken pox bubble anyway, and so you're just extending it a bit, and then that's it. Like, that will be it. They won't get it again. That's done. You're done.
Yes, and the difference is that I, like, for example, Tara, we're obviously podcasting today, and Tara's here, you know, on, like, she helps look after the kids, and she can be with him because he's not in excruciating agony, like, with all the blisters bursting out. So actually, I can still go out and get my work done and go for a run and do bits and pieces, and then it's fine. But he started sleeping in our bed, and it's so nice. We're co-sleeping.
You're co-sleepers. Oh, God.
Never thought I'd say, but I think I'm a co-sleeper, guys.
Do you know what I think it is? I think it's because we both know that like, Kit and Gigi are our last kids. Do you know what I mean? I think there is something about that. Like, with Axel, I was in such a rush, like, to get, you know, to not make him grow up, but, you know, like, to do all the things and, like, you know, sleep on his own and have his room and all that. And with Gigi, I'm like, no, I'm not going to take the sides off your cot yet. No. I'm not going to take the dummy away yet. No, not going to do any of that yet. Actually, Gigi was sick on Saturday night in her bed. And so she slept in with us. But I also had the dog. So I had James, Gigi, me, and the dog in the bed.
Well, is that your sort of dog that you sometimes have?
Our part-time dog.
What's he called again?
Rufus. He's actually
Rufus.
Just here.
He's the reason we met, by the way. Anyone that doesn't know.
Yes, he is. Rufus, it's down to you. He doesn't care.
How is she now?
No, do you know what? She's totally fine. So I thought, oh, she's obviously got like a sickness bug, like you say. And then the next day she was just absolutely fine,
absolutely
like nothing
fine
had happened. Yeah, so strange. Anyway,
well, Gigi came to a shoot with us on Friday, and she, what a little superstar Gigi is. We were in a hotel room for about 4 hours and she was loving it. Creative director, stylist, she was helping us out with our outfit, she was setting the set. I mean, she bloody loves it.
She does love it. And actually, I was trying on clothes for holiday last night, and I tried on, I don't really like wearing shorts, I never have my legs out, anyone we'll probably have noticed that. I don't, just don't do it. Anyway, so I'm trying these shorts on. She went, no, mummy, not stripes, not for you. So she said, I was like, And for a second, I caught myself like, oh, yeah, okay, cool, yeah. And then I thought, hang on, what? You're listening to a two-year-old. What are you doing?
Susanna Wintour.
She said it. Like, Susanna Wintour. No, mummy, no. Stripes, no, not for you. Oh.
She's so sassy. Great. She's such a diva. Basically, if anyone needs any style advice, just come straight to Gigi.
Come straight to Gigi.
She's not going to muck around with the
advice. She'll be doing a takeover soon. Yeah, she's very honest.
Listen, we had such a lovely conversation with this person that we're chatting to today that it actually went on for a little bit longer than we normally do. But George and I were so riveted by what he had to say. Yeah. And it's so great. We've got Dad on the podcast today. Always lovely hearing a male voice. Somebody that's been really open and honest about their whole entire life on YouTube for a very long time. But I think we saw a different person today.
Yeah, we did. I think, I mean, we sort of touched on it in the podcast, but I think sometimes when you become a father, when you've been through certain things, or a parent or father, you grow as a person, don't you? You really grow as a person. You look into yourself, you learn things about yourself, you think more about the person you want to be, maybe. And you have you're more conscious of your actions. And I think that was so true in this chat. And wow, it actually really took me by surprise. And it's one of the things I love about this podcast so much is you go into a chat thinking you're going to talk about one thing, and actually the conversation can go in so many different directions. So Zoe said, it's a longer one. So maybe if you haven't got time, listen in two parts, because you're not going to want to miss any of it. Because it's so wonderful.
Definitely not. And we want to say thank you to this person for being so honest and sharing so much today. Georgia, who are we chatting to?
Today, we are chatting to the brilliant Jim Chapman.
We always absolutely love it when we manage to get a father on the podcast. And seeing as this one who's been sharing his life on YouTube, sharing it with millions of people globally since about 2010, I feel like this conversation is going to be really honest, really raw, and really funny. Professionally, he has over 2 million subscribers and more than 100 million unique views. We like those numbers. They sound big, although we don't understand what they mean. and personally, he's just got married to his partner, Sarah. They've got a daughter, Margot, who's 8.5 months, we've just clarified. Welcome to the podcast. It's Jim Chapman.
Yay!
Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks for coming on. How are you?
I'm really good, thank you. We are ever so slightly stressed in our house. Actually, we're not even in our house. We're in the in-laws' house. We're renovating. So slightly ahead of schedule, the house got just not pleasant for a child. So we upped sticks earlier than intended. So we just kind of arrived at the in-laws' house. I'm like, can you just home us for a while? So back home, the builders are just dismantling and destroying and everything. So we don't really know what's going on. So in the meantime, we're just sort of semi-displaced, in that we're very well looked after by the in-laws, but we also kind of don't know what's going on back home. So stress levels are like, you know, they're minimally high. It's not a big problem. But we have suddenly invaded the parents. We're like, hi, to turn
hello.
Up.
Hello. Are these Sarah's parents? So they're your in-laws. And how's that relationship? Because we often touch on the mother-in-laws
absolute best
relationship.
Honestly, they is are it? Wonderful. Yeah, I've got like my own little relationship with each of them. So Sarah's dad, he's really... what's the word? He's obviously a man that is 65 or something. Most 65-year-old men I know are not at all in touch with themselves, or you know what I mean? But he gives really sound, honest advice. He's really keen to learn. He's really eager. Like my job fascinates him. So we talk at length about things. But also, you know, I've gone away with him a few times, just me and him, for like a weekend away. Jackie, Sarah's mum, I have, you know, we hang out all the time too. Like, she's really, really great. And then obviously Sarah's got a couple of brothers and a sister as well. So I'm really fortunate actually to have such wicked in-laws, because it isn't always the case.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, God, no. Yeah.
Yeah.
But is it quite nice having parents looking after you as well? Because that's what I always think. When I go to my parents' house, I become the child again. And I'm like, oh, I can sit here and wait for a cup of tea to come to me. All right, this is nice.
Yeah, but because we've also turned up with Margot, and Margot is actually an absolute dream. She's, you know, touch wood, a treasure. She's such an easy kid to look after. But we have just turned up at their house, so Sarah and I, with a month's worth of luggage, plus a month's worth of luggage for a child, plus the child.
Yeah.
So suddenly we're like, hi. So they're super accommodating. They're really welcoming. But we are also aware that we've kind of encroached on their space with loads of stuff with us. You know, we're potentially out of the house for 2 or 3 months. We don't really know yet. So we just sort of rocked up. So we are They're very gracious hosts and they look after us really well, but we're also quite conscious of trying to minimize the destruction. You know what I mean?
Staying our welcome.
Margot's got like her her play mat and it just sort of follows us around the house, but it's always in the middle of a room. And then I'm like, I don't want to just take up all your space, but at the same time, Margot loves hanging out with them and they are very keen. They can't wait to pick her up and squish her.
That's lovely.
Yeah, I try not to do it too much. I try not to give her to them too much because I don't want them to feel like they have to. But they love it. It's great.
Oh, it's great, isn't it? And congratulations. I mean, obviously for Margot, but also you just got married. Show us your rock, I was going to say, but yeah, obviously it's just a band.
We're not actually wearing them yet. So because so our wedding ceremony is in Spain in September. But we had to, because Sarah, I always say she's half Spanish. She's not, but her parents, so her dad used to work in Spain and he also inherited a place from his parents in Spain. So Sarah spent a lot of her summers there growing up. So she speaks the language, she loves the culture. We're getting married there in September, but we had to do the legal part. And it was either like the registry office in Wandsworth where we live, which is fine, right? But it's not like a huge like memory and it, you know. So we happened to be on a trip in LA recently for a work thing. And we were like, while we're there, should we like just get on a road trip to like Vegas or Santa Barbara or something? Because it's as legal, but it takes 5 minutes and it's much more for memory. In the UK, you have to like register your band and then you have to like, there's a delay and it takes forever.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of, it's not like a massive like memory, I suppose. It's you know, loads of people do it. And it's like, it's really great, but it kind of felt a bit sort of perfunctory for us because we're going to do our nice wedding in Spain. It just felt like a mechanism to get through it. So we're like, while we're here, let's make it a memory. So we actually flew Sarah's mum, Jackie, out with us. And Sarah's aunt, so Jackie and Sylvia, hadn't seen each other since well before the pandemic because she lives in America. So we were like, listen, Sylvia's in town. Jackie can fly out. So the two sisters got together and they hadn't seen each other for like 4 years. And we were like, while we're in town, let's just get hitched. So we drove to Santa Barbara in the pouring rain, took our baby with us, took Jackie and Sylvia. It took
Sylv
an hour.
And Jax got together. It's like the start of a movie. Yeah, Sylvia and Jax
Sylvia
to Santa Barbara.
Paid for the wedding because I couldn't get my card out because I was wearing a suit. It was like a couple of $100 or something. And she went, who's paying? And I, oh, I'll get it. And then I was fumbling with my card and Sylvia just went, paid for our wedding. So we owe her now. But yeah, it's a really, really lovely. I mean, it hardly ever rains in LA, right? And it was pouring it down. So we drove to Santa Barbara and it was like torrential. So we got drenched. But that was all kind of part of the, you know, part of the drama, part of the day.
Part so, yeah, of the fun.
Can you give us any sort of details about the day? Like we obviously saw what Sarah was wearing, but was it literally just the five of you there and that was it? And
Yeah. I mean, the details are essentially exactly what Kourtney Kardashian just did. We got married at Santa Barbara Courthouse and then went to the Rosewood for lunch. And only went to the Rosewood for lunch because we Googled where we can go. And then the other day she did exactly that. And I was like, I'm such an influencer. Look at me.
She copied you.
Yeah.
Before we get into your life as a parent, can you just take us back and tell us a little bit about your childhood and, you know, your relationships with your sisters and your mum and what growing up was like for you?
Instantly going to get really, really heavy. Growing up for me was, I was really well loved. I never questioned that. My dad was abusive to my mum, but also because of that, there's an atmosphere in the house. Now, obviously, as a kid, you don't know that because that's your default. That's just what you live with. You don't know any different. It wasn't until I got to like visit my friends' houses. I was like, hang on, your house isn't like really tense and like scary. So where my dad was either not around or was not a particularly positive role model, my mum and my sisters really took over, actually. So I don't think of myself as particularly unfortunate or like I don't wear it as a badge or I don't use it as an excuse for any behavior or anything like that, because actually I was super loved by my mum and my sisters and obviously my twin brother. I look at my childhood and yes, there were kind of ups and downs, but overall it was really, really happy like any other. I mean, my dad kind of went when it got kind of ugly and then the police and the courts got involved. From about like 5 or 6, he was no longer in the house. And then by the time I was like 9 or 10, I kind of stopped seeing him. And so
Right.
There were, anything to do around him was, scary. Scary is the word, I suppose. It was scary. It was unnerving. He was unpredictable. And I think as a kid, you need that sort of stability. Even if that stability is always negative, you know what to expect. You know to avoid it. If it's so unpredictable that I remember sometimes I'd hang out with him and we'd draw together, or he would, we used to have these magazines that you'd collect a piece of the figure every week. So by the end of it, you've got I remember having a big tarantula figure. So we'd do that once in a while, but he'd go months without doing it, and then we'd have to catch up on loads. So there were positive moments, but then more frequently there was all of the negative, the not knowing, the being unsure, and of course that makes a really unpredictable caregiver, and that is actually, I think, more damaging than someone who's consistently negative, because you don't know what to expect, and you go to your caregiver for love and attention and sustenance and affection or whatever, and if you don't know what you're going to get, you never know kind of how it's going to go. Whereas I think if someone is consistently negative, I mean, that's awful, don't get me wrong, but at least you end up finding other ways around and you don't go to them anymore. My mum was the opposite, obviously, and was consistently positive, but she was looking after four kids whilst working, whilst also going through all of the divorce proceedings and the court, which took a long time actually, because it did get really ugly, but also was, she's a really tough, strong woman, my mum, but you can't just escape these things. And people always say, you just get out. You can't, because my dad was volatile. Like when we went in the house, he'd just break in and would trash the place. Or one time, and this is a really, this is strong wording, but one time my mum always says he kidnapped me. I don't think he necessarily kidnapped me, but he came to the house and he was not allowed, because there was a junction against him. And so I opened the window. I said, "Mum's calling the police. You better go." So he just sort of took me out of the window. Now, I don't think it was as drastic as him snatching me out of the window. He was my dad, so I wasn't scared to go to him. Yeah. Again, it was unpredictable. Yeah. But part of the unpredictability is what he did do is he put me in his car and drove off. We ended up in a police chase. It kind of got pretty hectic.
Wow, Jim, it's a lot.
There was kind of it's kind of a tale of two halves, my childhood, in that I don't feel like I was particularly hard done by. That's what happened in my childhood. I've had loads of therapy, I am really at peace with it. I don't think my dad was actually a terrible human being. I think he was just he was dealt a bad hand. He had MS, but I think he reacted to that in a fairly selfish way. I think sometimes my sister has MS, for example, and her attitude towards it is, hey, I've got it. Unfortunately, it's one of those things, I can't control it. I didn't ask for it, but I've got what I've got. And so she takes her medication and she looks at new ways of being around for longer. But she's also got a really positive attitude. And I think that makes a massive difference when you've got an illness like that. Because I think my dad kind of wasted himself away by his sort of negative, and then he ended up lonely. He lost us, and we're really great.
Yeah, you are.
I mean, my whole family are bloody wonderful, and he passed away when I was, how long ago was it? I only found out about it on Facebook or something. So it must have been 5, 6, 7 years ago. And
right.
I found out about it and was like, oh, okay, that's a shame. Like, it sounded to me like, because obviously I've got that connection to him because he's my dad, but it sounded to me a bit like when you find out someone two doors down has passed away. You're like, oh, okay. You never really knew very well, but you knew enough to acknowledge. And it didn't really have a massive impact on him because he wasn't my dad anymore. He wasn't an excellent role model. He wasn't an excellent caregiver. He was a source of worry and concern and negativity in my life. On the flip side, my siblings and my mum, fantastic, and I always knew that I had that secure base. And I think that has made, for me, my childhood made a massive difference. And that's the stuff that I choose to go back to. That's the stuff that matters, and my family is super duper tight. I think it would be tight regardless, but I do question whether that kind of shared experience has kind of cemented us even more, you know.
I think it's really interesting, and I think it's really admirable, actually, that you went and did the work and you went and did the therapy, because, you know, historically we look, and actually you started the podcast by saying it, that, you know, most 65-year-old men aren't necessarily that kind of open, and they maybe lack of in touch with themselves and stuff. So was that a process that you felt you absolutely had to go through to grieve, you know, I mean, you say your dad only died 5 or 6 years ago, but for you, potentially the door was shut a long time ago. So what was that process like for you?
I've been seeing a therapist for, God, I mean, for 10, 11, 12 years, since actually around the time I started doing the YouTube thing, only coincidentally, not because I needed it, around that. But coincidentally, I think my girlfriend at the time really struggled with anxiety. And so I took her, and her anxiety was so intense that she was worried about being in the room with her therapist, because she, you know, it was a new person, and she was convinced that her therapist was going to like make her worse or had like nefarious motives. So I said, I'll sit in with you. It's fine. I'll be there, and I won't say a word. I'll just be there for support. Anyway, it came up a conversation, and the therapist was like, you know, everyone's got something to deal with. And I thought, maybe I do. I kind of brushed it off at the time, and then I gave her a call later and was like, you know what, if everyone's got something to deal with, then I may as well come in for a chat. And then 10 11 12 years later, I still speak to her. I think at the moment, you know, sometimes there are times when I'm going through a moment, anxiety kicks in, or I'm prone to sort of like bouts of misery. And so sometimes things kick in, so I need her. But actually, because I've been doing it for so long now, I'm pretty good at recognizing the signs, and I know that I'm smart, and I know that I've got all of the tools at my disposal to be fine. So more than anything, I talk to her kind of for mental admin type things. Or actually, at the moment, we're talking about swimming because I'm scared of water. And so we're like, what else do you want? So I'm deciding to start swimming.
I think a lot of these things often come up again when you're about to become a parent, or you become a parent, because then you start thinking back, don't you, to, oh, what type of parent do I want to be? And then you think, oh, well, my mum did this and I loved that. What sort of father do you want to be? I mean, I know you're a father already, but in general, how do you want to raise your little girl?
It's tough, because I kind of want to say I want to protect her from everything, but actually I think that's what my mum tried to do for too long, actually. And it wasn't, we only found out about the way my dad was behaving when my brother and I walked in on it. Prior to that, it had just been an unpleasant household. We'd never known and we just thought that was normal. It wasn't until we kind of almost had that sort of point of context where we'd gone, oh my God, he's actually hurting her. Suddenly things made a bit more, even as a kid, things made a bit more sense, right? So there's an element of wanting to protect her from everything, but also I appreciate that isn't always the right thing to do. You can't, you know, soon enough she'll be an adult, and you can't protect her forever. Or, you know, I may get hit by a bus tomorrow, and then she needs to have some sort of autonomy. I think in a way my childhood, my whole family, so my brother and my two big sisters, were super autonomous, to the point of we'd be fine on our own. I don't need people. And actually, I think that we've got that switched up a bit too high. But I think partly because we spent a lot of time on our own, because my mum was a really busy mum looking after four kids on her own, my brother and I would just go out skateboarding and cause mischief and that sort of stuff. So we were really good in our own space, and we're really independent, and we can look after ourselves, and that's a really good quality. But
it's
actually
a really great skill. Yeah, it's a really great skill.
It is when it's switched up to like a 6 or a 7. When I've got it at like a 9, I just don't talk to anybody. I've got 2 friends. I'm really close to my family. I don't have loads of friends because I don't need them, or I don't even really want them. You know what I mean? And even Sarah sometimes is like, hello, come back to me, because I'll just sort of switch off. And if I've got like a project on, I'm working, I'll just disappear forever. So something I try to do loads with Margot is I make sure that I'm present. I do every morning, apart from Saturday morning, that's my morning off. So I do the mornings with her. I try not to like have my phone in my hand all the time. I want to like be present. I do probably 8 out of 10 bath times, because sometimes I'm working late, but I'm there for the bath times, and I put her down for bed. And I want to make sure that I'm around and that I'm present. I think again, because my mum, not through any fault of her own, but she couldn't be super present. And I want Margot to like enjoy people, and she does. She really, really loves, like, she's super social. But I also want her, it's a kind of a fine balance. I don't want her to be dependent on everybody, but I also want her to enjoy people's company. So I just want to make sure that I'm present enough, but almost like that sort of solid base that she can jump from and climb back on board if she
the calls. Consistent base that's always there. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's really interesting that you touched on the fact that we obviously want to try and protect our kids, because you know, it's that sort of it's here, and it's been built inside us. You know, if we hear that someone's been mean to our kid at school, we're like, I'm gonna tear their head off.
Yeah.
But then you're like, well, actually, they've got to become slightly streetwise. And I said this to Luna, because she's my middle daughter, she's the most sensitive soul out of them all, and she'll cry if, you know, somebody doesn't smile at her in the right way. She's like, what does it mean? I'm like, that's just the way she smiles, you know, and people are going to be mean to you, and people are going to shrug it. Like, you're going to have to grow thicker skin. Mm-hmm. And I think in a way that's a better skill than constantly trying to protect her. Cause at some point, like you said, she's going to go, and then what's going to happen?
Right.
I do worry about
Sarah
that.
Sarah's like a real mama bear. Already there's been a few things where she's got, like, and I'm like, she's 8 months. No one has an opinion yet. You know, she's not going to fall out of anybody. And already she kind of has like these moments where she gets, like offended on her behalf, and I'm like, it's for me, I'm super, I'm very patient. I've got like a long fuse. When my fuse goes, then I'll, you know, explode. I've got a very long fuse, and so I let a lot slide. And I like to think really empathetic, so I will often think about it from the other person's perspective. And I actually think that even if that's a perspective you can't really get your head around and still think they're wrong, by the time you've got into that mindset and you thought, so what are they thinking? You kind of calm down a bit anyway, because you've almost like counted to 10 by default, you know? So I mean, obviously when my Sarah can push my buttons and we'll argue, but for the most part, I don't get angry. I don't shout. I'm pretty calm, and I want Margot to sort of be around thoughtfulness, I think, you know, rather than just react. Okay. Sarah's super emotional, super reactive. That's really cool. And like, she's like kind of quite feisty, and I love that about her. And most of the time she's in the right, you know, she's very rarely wrong. She loves like justice and stuff, and that's great. And I think Margot needs a sense of that, but I also think she has to appreciate that the world isn't just right and wrong, or, you know, kind of good and bad. There's loads of gray, and everybody's living in their own bubble, regardless of what. Like my dad, again, go back to him as an example, did a lot of bad things. I don't think he was a bad man. I think he sort of lived in that sort of gray area, you know, and I think that's important. Mm. That it's quite a complicated thing for a kid to understand. They get wronged in some way, and then they either want retribution, or they want to sort of start pointing fingers and whatever. And I think it'd be really important for Margot to try to teach her that you have to kind of consider things from other perspectives.
Yeah, I think it's incredible that you look at things like that. We'll be right back after this short break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we?
And I think as well, like we spoke about this before we started recording, I think when you become a parent, there's a lot of comparison. It's instantly, you know, from the size of a person's bump to how many antenatal classes are you doing, to what type of birth are you having, to
your baby got
are they
teeth
crawling
yet?
Are they sleeping? Are they doing this? How have you found that, especially in this first, especially in the first 8.5 months where I think it is full on,
especially on social media. And you're right, and I would argue that it's much worse for mothers, because they obviously carry the baby in the first place, right? So they've already got that competition. Besides the fact, like, pregnancy is an odd thing for a man, for the partner, because you don't have all that bonding instantly that a mother has, you know, whilst gestating. You know, for me, Sarah was getting larger and I could feel Margot kicking and everything, but I couldn't have that connection. She wasn't inside me, you know, so it's an odd thing to feel. And so I guess by default, I'm obviously super protective over the two of them still now, but when Sarah was pregnant, you know, as one unit, super protective, but still super rational about it all, I think. Whereas with Sarah, it's like a massive emotional, you just can't, I think, as if you can't carry a baby, you can't compute the situation, I think. And I appreciate that, and I know I'm never really going to know. So I would argue it's much worse. And also, Sarah does the majority of the day-to-day mothering now, because obviously I work. And so, again, it's harder for her, because she's the one who is kind of compared to. So particularly hard doing what I do as well and what Sarah does, because we're on social media. So you scroll through your phone and you see loads of parents going, hey, my baby's doing this, my baby's doing that.
Oh, yeah, God.
And I'm forever saying to Sarah, but look at our kid. Is she happy? Like, just she is the happiest little sod you've ever, like, she just constantly smiles. She's even teething at the moment, and it's pretty hectic. Like, one of her tooth looks really sore, actually. And she, when she's not in pain, she's having a great time. Like, I couldn't ask for anything else. Like, my priority is firstly her safety, then her health, then her happiness. Everything else will come, or it won't come. It doesn't matter. Like, Margot never really rolled. She's only rolling now. She's 8.5 months. Apparently, that's a sign that kids typically do at 4 months. Doesn't matter. So she doesn't like being on. She doesn't like being on her tummy very much. Even
she
now,
she might not be into roller coasters.
She can roll now. She doesn't particularly like it. And then when she ends up on her tummy, she gets a bit kind of like irritable. So okay, so what? But she sits up fine, and she's, you know, whatever happens, happens. I honestly look at her and I just think, oh, we really lucked out, because she's just a wonderful little soul. I know everyone says that about their kids, but she's not like fractious. She hardly cries unless there's something actually wrong. She's like clockwork. She'll start doing this little whingy noise, and you're okay. So she's either pooped, or she's tired, or she's hungry. It's one of those three things. Once you fixed it, she's happy again. So I would much rather have a happy baby, a happy little person in my life than the most advanced kid in the world.
Then a kid doing roly-polies at 4 months.
It is amazing the comments that you get, though. And for first-time parents, I mean, I don't know if it's the same, like you were saying, you think the mothers have it harder, but I would argue that actually if anybody says anything to you, regardless of whether you're the mother or the father, it is quite difficult not to let it just roll off your back, you know? And, you know, when you're getting comments like, oh, Luna didn't get any teeth till she was, I think, like 13 or 14.
Yeah, I remember this.
People messed with me, like, you really need to take her to the dentist. I was like, of course I don't. Like, of course her teeth are going to come.
What are they going to do? Put chains in her gums and pull them down just so she's got some teeth? It's ridiculous.
You kind of can't win on the internet. I think I'm very fairly lucky. And again, Sarah's only been doing this as long as she's known me, so she kind of stumbled into it. I've been doing this since the beginning of social media, so my skin is super duper thick. And things do just kind of ricochet. It's harder when it's about my wife or my child, because I'm like, hang on a second, they don't deserve it, because I've put myself in this position and I can take it. But you can't, like, Margot's doesn't have, she, you know, her skin's super baby soft and lovely. She hasn't got thick skin yet. Maybe she'll get there, maybe she won't, I don't know. But either way, and I'm simply like, I would say 99.99999 recurring percent of the comments I get are super positive. If ever they're not, I just won't post anymore. You know, Margot's happiness and safety and health is far more important than my social media. So I just will stop. I'm really enjoying sharing stuff, because she's at the point where she's doing new stuff all the time. And it's just every day is like it's just the best. And so I
also love
it.
Your relationship with Sarah. It seems very kind of playful. And from what I've seen, like I watched your vlog when you went to America and you're doing the road trip and she just came on and she was like, hi, it's me. I'm your favorite one out of the two of us. Wow. And I was like, she's funny. She's very funny. Yeah. And you guys, was it a big love affair when you guys met? I find that quite interesting because obviously I know that you know, we all know that you were with somebody for quite a long time before that. And Then you met Sarah and it seemed quite kind of instant.
Yeah. I mean, it was fairly instant for us. But it wasn't, I think there's kind of been the timeline of it has been slightly misconstrued by when stories were released by the press. Actually, there was plenty of time between my ex and meeting Sarah. But when we met, we were like, oh my God, like she was my first date on, since before my ex was 13 years, something like that.
Wow.
And my sister had said to me, I know what you're like, don't go falling in love, you know, like try before you buy, play around a bit, be, you know, kind of be a bit naughty for a while, like you deserve it, have fun. And I was like, yeah, great, I will. I'll just start, like, I'm never going to be a player, but I was like, I'll go on a few dates, I'll meet a few people and, you know, no strings, all that stuff. I met Sarah and I was like, shit, she's really great.
I should have left you for a few months.
Right, yeah, so, like, yeah, she was my first date for 12 years or whatever it was. And then, we couldn't, like, attach at the hip from that point on.
Oh, that's really lovely, yeah. Jim.
And when did you decide that you wanted to start a family? Is it something you always both wanted?
Yeah, I would have had kids. I'm 33. I would have had kids a decade ago. I've got two big sisters, both of which have kids, and I've got a twin brother. So my oldest niece is 17. And then obviously Bobby, my brother's kid is three, and they kind of range in between. And there's Margot, obviously, who's 8 months. And I've always wanted it. Like I've always known. And actually it was on our second date, Sarah and I were talking about it. We weren't talking about like, oh, here's our future. We weren't sort of that weird, but I can't remember how it came up in conversation. I think I was talking about my niece and she was talking about hers. And we just sort of went, are kids like a thing for you? And I was like, yeah, they definitely are. And I don't, again, it wasn't like a conversation where we were planning out our future because we'd only known each other for about 48 hours at this point. But we were talking about, you know, when you first meet someone, you really click and you just talk about everything. I didn't know at the time, but she went back to her friend and was like, oh my God, he wants kids too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's super maternal. And she's great with obviously my nieces and nephews, but also her own. And yeah, she's the most wonderful mother. She gets in her head about stuff quite often, and will worry she's not doing enough or Margot's not happy enough. Or I'm sure it doesn't. And like I have to keep reminding her like how wonderful she. Sarah walks in the room and Margot loses her mind. Like she's just. They're best pals. It's great. I don't think sometimes she doesn't give herself enough credit because it's more than a full-time job. Like doing what I do, you know, I'm not around all day because I'm working, but what I do is so much easier than what she does. And I don't really care what job you do. It's easier than raising a kid. Like it's, you don't get time off apart from when they nap. And even when they nap, you're like, right, okay, I've got ironing and I've got like to do the laundry whilst keeping an ear open in case she freaks out. So, I've taken a day less a week, so I'll have a day in the week off, so like a 4-day week now. But it doesn't always work with my job. You know, I was away over the weekend recently because I had a job on, and then I had like a really crazy week, so I ended up doing 7 days, you know, in a row. Yeah. And so if I'm not even at home, I can't even do the mornings or the evenings. So Sarah does everything, you know. But for the most part, I try to make sure that I work less hours and I finish at an appropriate time, and I'm around Lowe's to give her a break because it's really hard. But I think for Sarah, she is the most incredible mother, but she gets burnt out because she has to do so much of it, and then she gets tired, and then if ever she loses her temper, then she feels really guilty. So we're quite good at, even if I'm upstairs in the office and I'm writing and I can hear Sarah getting stressed by Margot, I'll kind of just have 5 minutes where I'll go, right, give it to me for 5 minutes, you go get a coffee. And then we'll reset because it's hard, especially if they're like whingy and it's in your ear. And when Margot was teething the first time around, when her bottom teeth came through, it was pretty hectic. And, you know, she was just going in Sarah's ear the whole time. And there's only so long you can take before you just go, I need a break.
I'm gonna lose my mind here. Yeah, I mean, it's. I think it's happening across households globally to one or both parents. But it's really great that you can come down and be like, right, step away from it for a second,
and also see that she needs a break. You're there. Yeah. I think sometimes, you know, if one parent is working out of the house a lot and isn't there to witness what these, because when you come home and you say, I've been driven mad today. They've been whinging and whining. Unless you're there and you actually hear it, I think it's quite hard to grasp how much that can wear you down. I always say, like, my husband never used to be around on a Saturday, and I said to him, do you know what, Saturdays are like my worst day of the week. And he's like, what, why? Saturday's such a good day. And I'm like, no, because you don't understand, because everybody else is, you know, doing things with their families and all of that, and then I feel like I've just got two people shouting at me for the whole day. And it's not until he has actually had to go through that and do that that he's I get what you mean. Yeah. I understand why a Saturday is so different to another day of the week. He understands.
I've got a friend who insists on these, like, really antiquated sort of gender roles. He goes out to work, and to be fair, he works away from the house. And actually, Sarah and I have discussed this for a while, because there was a point where I was like, I can't actually get any work done because I'm driven by this guilt that I'm not doing enough parenting, and I can hear you getting stressed, and I can hear Margot crying downstairs, so I can't focus on any work. But then if I stop working, I'm not really being a very good dad, because I'm thinking about the work I've got to do back upstairs, you know. So we talked for a while about getting, like, an office space, and now we've just sort of met in the middle. And, like, if I've got my door closed, basically that means I'm working. Only kind of bother me if you really, really need me. Like, you know, if Margaret losing her mind and you need a break, obviously come distract me. But otherwise, I'm basically at the office. But I've got this this friend who has, weirdly, I didn't really see it coming from him either, but he's got this, like, this really, like, sort of antiquated gender roles where he goes out to work and he works in an office. But because he sort of brings home the money in
quotation marks,
he doesn't do anything else. Like, he won't do the mornings. He won't do bedtime. He gets kind of, like, he kind of throws his weight around a bit about, like, well, you couldn't do any of this if it wasn't for me. You know, right? I'm really kind of offended by it. And then on the weekends, he'll often, like, go out and get pissed. And you know what I mean? And I can't get my head, partly because for me, the time I get to spend with my family is the best time, better than work time. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love what I do. But also, I think because I spend most of my time doing what I do, hanging out with my daughter is kind of the a breath of fresh air. I'm like, oh, I'm not at my desk, or I'm not, like, responding to emails or filming things constantly. I've got some time with my girl. But also, you must be so out of touch with what parenting is. And I guess by being out of the house by default, you kind of maybe are. You just don't realize what a challenge it can be. And like I said before, I think any job you do is easier than parenting. Because you don't get a day off.
Jim, I mean, I know that both Georgia and I absolutely love what you've just said, because we are all about, I mean, that sort of goes into the forgotten father element, where, you know, the partner or the working partner who is out of the house then becomes so detached with what's going on in the house, doesn't feel part of it, doesn't want to be part of it, doesn't know how to be part of it. And then the communication breaks down, and then the relationships, I mean, it happens so quickly.
You can see how it happens.
You can see how it happens. Mm-hmm. And I think, is he one of your two friends?
No, he's not actually. No, they're fine. Yeah.
They're fine.
He's kind of more of an acquaintance. Yeah.
I was going to say, because you could have a chat with him about it.
Have you pulled him up on it? It'd be really interesting to sort of.
Yeah, yes. And I mean, I don't know him well enough to sort of be that guy, but I will sort of make. I'm not one for passive aggressiveness, so I won't sort of. If I'm going to say something, I'll say it. So what I will do is frame it from my perspective and go, oh, I love hanging out with my kid, that sort of thing, and see if it gets any. And it doesn't.
What
really.
About you?
Yeah.
How about you?
I think it's just easier for him to not. But I think you're right. Like, if you want to have a good relationship with your kids, you need to put the time in. I think as well. Like, I'm privileged now, and I wasn't as a child. Like, but like I said, I was loved, and what remains true, whether you've got money or you don't, is the time that kids need. Margot doesn't care any less about how expensive a toy is. She likes them if they're colourful and if they make a noise, but they can be from a charity shop or you can spend a fortune on it. What she actually cares about is the time you spend playing with the toy with her, right? And that will be true forever. We're lucky that we all get to go on nice holidays and do all these things because I can afford it now. But even if I couldn't, like, she'd still be as loved, you know, and still have the same amount of my time. I get that sometimes, you know, I've been through a really busy spell the last sort of few weeks, so I've not been around as much. But I had a work opportunity come up next weekend, and I said no, because like I'd much rather actually be spending the time that I've missed, because I've not seen her for 2 weeks, really, because I've been in my office. I'd much rather spend that weekend catching up with her, you know, especially at the moment, because she's doing new things constantly. And I can't get my head around a parent, man or woman, or any person who wouldn't want to see their kid develop in front of them, and wouldn't want the opportunity to be their friend. Like, I really hope that as we get older, Margot kind of is, obviously I'm always going to be a dad, so there'll always be that sort of relationship. I also want her to want to talk to me, not have to talk to me. Mm. And I want her to make that choice, not it be a necessity, as she gets older. And to do that, you've got to earn it. You don't just get to, you know, ejaculate and then do nothing forever and then go, okay, I'm your dad forever now. You know, good luck with that.
Jim, I've just had a title for your next book, Jim Chapman, How to Be a Present Dad, in brackets, it's not just ejaculation, close brackets. Okay, I'm just saying it. If that's the title you go for.
Yeah, it's not.
Right? And it's not.
You don't just ejaculate. That's it.
Before we say goodbye to you, well, that's quite a nice place to kind of wrap things up. We would love to hear the piece of advice that you would give to a new father, or the best piece of advice that you were given as a new dad.
I think the best piece of advice is not to worry. There are times when you need to worry, like if your kid's ill, you know, oh, okay, you need to sort of, you know, I think, but one thing I do know is that they are around you all the time. And if you're worried about work or about them not rolling over or whatever it may be, they do pick up on that stuff. And I spent far too much of my existence already worrying about something, and actually worrying doesn't get you anywhere. It is a waste of time. And I really want Margot to sort of to be content. I know there will be worries that crop up in her life, and there'll be problems to overcome, but I don't want her to sort of spend her time fixated on things that might never happen, or to worry about a potential problem. Like I'm always saying to Sarah, because she's a worry, I'm like, if the thing happens, then we'll fix the thing. Until the thing happens or doesn't happen, we're not going to worry about it, because it's not even a thing right now. It's just it's ethereal. It's like a fragment of your imagination. So until it's an actual problem, we're not going to think about it. And I want Margot to sort of have that attitude. Gary, Sarah's dad, does that exceptionally well. He just switches off from things. And then if then there's an issue to overcome, he'll just use his resources and he'll fix it. And I know that it's taken me a long time to get to that place in my life. And I've spent so much of my life prior to that worrying about stuff that is unnecessary. And I really want Margot to enjoy. I mean, I'm 34. Am I 34? Yeah, I think I'm 34. And I reckon I spend a lot of that time just stressing and worrying. And I think that I'm already, a third of the way through my life, if I'm lucky. And like, I've spent so much of that time just stressing. And I want Margot to enjoy every minute of it. And I think a lot of that comes from the attitude you have. She's going to be super well resourced, both because we can give her a good life, but also because I want her to trust in her own abilities and, you know, all that. So I know that she'll be able to fix her problems when they arise. So I don't want her to stress about the problems before they get there. Because I think that, again, it's a total waste of time and energy.
I love that.
Love that. And I love that you think you're going to live to 100 as well, Jim. I'm all about that.
Yeah, that was optimistic. Not the way I'm going.
No, great.
And what products have you been loving over this last 8 months? Things you really swear by?
Yeah, there's not loads of stuff, actually, because I don't want to just keep buying stuff all the time. And also because of my job, I get sent a lot of stuff and I just decline a lot of it because I'm like, I don't need stuff constantly. But we love a white noise machine. And we have one actually attached to our pushchair, which is like a rechargeable little doodah. So if she needs to sleep, we'll just recline the pushchair, pull the shade thing over so it's dark, and turn the white noise on. And sometimes she'll need like a bottle as well to see her off, but invariably she will sleep. Is it called the Tommy Tippy Perfect Prep machine? We didn't bring it with us to the in-law, so now I'm boiling the kettle constantly, so I've either got Milka scolding And it takes so long to make a bottle, and then you've got to shake it all up and it goes all frothy, and you're like, oh, now I've got to find how much more liquid to put in to put it up to 7 ounces. But yeah. Now it's all frothy, like it's all bubbly on top and I can't see. And then it takes forever to cool. So the Perfect Prep machine is brilliant.
What was that? What was that sleep thing that you were sharing it on your Instagram? I think it was from Tommy Tippy as well, actually.
It's called the Tommy Tippy Dreammaker, and we have that at home. We didn't bring it with us. Oh, no, we did. We brought it with us. It's in the room that Margot's sleeping in. It's really smart in that it's got this like cry sensor thing. So if she makes a noise, it kicks off again and it plays pink noise, actually, which is like white noise, but actually pink. And it kind of, I think it replicates what they hear in the womb more accurately.
Right.
And
yeah.
It also has this, like, this red light. So Sarah's really, what's the word? Like she doesn't believe the red light thing. She's like, but it's a light. I'm like, yes, but it's not like stimulating because it doesn't wake them up. And it's actually like a, but she will often, I'll walk in and she's often put like a thing on top of it.
No, that's me. I used to do that. Even that, you know, the cowpole plug-in thing?
Right.
Yeah, you've seen them. There's and they've got lights on them. All of mine have got like black tape stuck over the top of them.
But it's not like, I keep saying to her, it's not white light. It won't stimulate her. It won't wake her up. It actually is soothing. I keep saying it's scientifically proven to soothe. And she says, yes, but it's also scientifically proven that it's sleep in the dark. Like, yeah, but it's essentially the dark because it's like red light. It doesn't make it anyway.
This argument's been around for a while.
I said, if you
want
to put something on top of it and block out the red light, that's fine. You do it. But when I'm doing it, I'm not going to because I think it's good. Anyway, it also has this red light that sort of pulses to like either the rate of an adult's breath or a child's breath. So it kind of helps soothe. It is really good, actually, that thing. Mm. And it'll kick off again, like if she cries. So we have that. That is actually another thing that we find fairly essential.
That's brilliant. Love that. Okay. Yeah. Jim, thank you so much for coming on and sharing so much with us. And I don't know, me and Georgia just love watching your parenting journey. It's like, you seem very happy.
I'm super happy. Yeah. I can't wait actually for another one. We're slightly concerned. We're like, what if the other one is a dickhead? Because this one's like super easy.
Yeah.
Do you picture having a big family?
I think we want to. Like, I think Jackie once said, Sarah's mum once said, if you've got more kids and you've got hands, things get really difficult. So I think two's a really good number. I also think it's slightly more, like, again, I'm one of four and you need to get a bigger car at that point. And,
logistics.
Things are just a bit trickier. And I just, I mean, I think two is lovely. I just don't want Margot to be an only child because I think as a twin, it's really, really lovely to have somebody to share your childhood with who is a contemporary rather than a parent. And I think that I'd like that.
Yeah. And also when you're sitting on the sun loungers, when you do go on a holiday and they're a little bit older, they've got each other. They're like little best mates and you guys can sit back and enjoy a drink.
Right.
Yeah. Even if they are fighting, you can just watch it happen.
Right. Yeah, I'm aware. Both my sisters have two kids each, and I'm aware that they do drive each other mental. But again, my twin brother and I, we always loved each other. We'd always like be there for each other. And there were times where like one of us would get in a fight, and the other one would step in because we're like, not my twin. But you know, when you're at school and everything, we were the twins, and we had like one identity to share, and so we kind of hated that, and we rebelled a bit, and we'd fight constantly. But as soon as you then kind of come out the other end of that, I went on to university, I did sixth form, I did like education. My brother went to an apprenticeship and became a carpenter and then a personal trainer. We love each other much, much more. Well, I say we love each other. We like each other much, much more because suddenly we're allowed our own personalities and we're so different. Like I think our cores are very much the same. But as people, we're like, he just burps and farts constantly. We're totally different. And I think having a childhood where you're like just the same is tricky. And I think that's kind of fairly true for siblings who are also sort of close in age. But as you get older, you appreciate each other more, I think.
Of course you do. It's lovely. Yeah. Well, we'll get you both back on when baby number two's
That's great. Yeah. Thanks so much,
Thanks
Jim.
So much, Jim. Pleasure.
Thanks very much.
I mean, the book title, did you hear what he said? He said, no, that's no, not that's the name not of the title. That's not it. No, that's not it. So do you think he's writing a book?
I would say so. And he did say a lot, actually. Oh, when I'm writing. I mean, we should have picked up on that, really, shouldn't we?
What a lovely chat.
I would put money on it that he's definitely going to be bringing out a book very soon.
Ooh, I wonder what it's going to be about. I wonder if it's a parenting book.
Well, it'd be so interesting if it is, especially everything he's been through. I mean, wow.
Wow, what a story.
Do you know what I found actually quite incredible? That he's been through all of that. he doesn't see himself as a victim. And he also said, I don't think my dad's a bad person.
No.
And I got, it must take a lot of work and a lot of, I guess, empathy and just growth to get to that point when you've witnessed such, horrible things.
Yeah, I found that side of it really interesting, actually. And I think for me, the one thing that stood out was how everything that he's gone through in his childhood has made him a better man today. You know, that he's not following in his father's footsteps, you know, because it can take you down a certain path. You know, if you witness that level of abuse, you know, there is a pattern with that.
The stats and he's are got, there. It's the stats they're, are there. They're really
yeah, exactly.
high. Yeah.
But not for Jim and the way that he was, you know, speaking about his levels of empathy and the fact that he wants to be present, not on his phone, and that, you know, the shouting and the yelling, it just doesn't happen in the house because obviously that's what he saw. What an incredible man, what an incredible father.
I know. And also the way he talks about Sarah, just, I know, you know, it's
lovely,
actually,
isn't it?
So nice. I hope Dawson and James speak about us like that at work.
They do not. No. Do you know what? I think they do, actually. In fact, I met someone the other day and said that they bumped into Dozer in the pub, go figure, and he was like, apparently he was raving about me, saying what an incredible person and mother I was. So that's
right,
really nice.
Maybe we need to like what do you do, put like a little mic on them so we can hear what they say. My god, maybe we should do that as an experiment. Wouldn't that be interesting?
Oh my
and
good
then
lord,
set someone up to talk to them like in the coffee shop and then just start talking about parenting and what they actually think of us. And
Georgia, have you taken some drugs this morning? What if they say we're shit? We'll fucking have to leave them at that point.
Oh yeah, that's yeah, maybe we shouldn't do that, but I would be so interested to know
to hear what James says about you.
Yeah, like in that way, you know, and he's like, oh, she's so mature. He did say certain things, didn't he, like, you know, she's quite volatile and all those you know, those things. But when he came down to it, he says, oh my gosh, she's such a wonderful mother, and I don't know, I think it's really lovely.
I'll bet 100 quid on it that James would say the same thing about you. Well, anyway, look, I'll put one of those voice recorders
we'll
on myself.
Bunk him. Is that illegal?
This podcast taking a twist at the end, isn't it? Thank you so much for listening. As always, we would love you, if you have the time, to rate, review, subscribe and give the podcast a little follow. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, please do. And any feedback you've got, we're all ears. Please do drop us a DM. We're on @MadeByMamas on Instagram and we'll be back on Friday.
Made by Mamas is an Insanity podcast production and today's episode was produced by the wonderful Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.